I'm with Steve Willetts now, and we're in fact driving out to West London to Brentford Towers, where you've made a work, Steve. In fact, we're about, or rather you're about, halfway through this piece. Perhaps, I mean, when we get there, we'll talk more specifically inside the tower, but as we drive there, perhaps you could talk a little bit about the general concerns of the work.
I felt that it was about the right moment now to make a new work which would really try to show quite clearly, you know, that the artist can work within the actual fabric of society. I mean, this has been a concern of mine for very many years, and I've tried to set up a series of works in different kind of contexts which are expressive of the sort of modern life, of the sort of world we live in at the moment. And, you know, which can be read by an audience as kind of, symbols that they know about. I mean, I've been working with tower blocks for a long time, as you know, and tower block to me has been a symbol of the sort of like institutions of society. And it's a sort of symbol that you know about whether you live in a tower block or not. You know what they're about.
Now, you have worked in West London a lot, and, I mean, we're on the Westway now, travelling west. Why did you choose this particular tower block? Because as we drive along the Westway, we can see all sorts of tower blocks around us. I mean, why Brentford Towers particularly?
Well, believe me, I know all these tower blocks, you know. I mean, I've looked and worked in most of them and researched a lot of them. I chose this particular group of towers, in particular Harvey House, which is in the centre of the development, for very good reasons. The thing about this location is the totality of it. I mean, it really expresses the idea of the new reality. It's a location made in the conceived of in the late 60s and made in the early 70s, and it has a totality about it in the sense that it has walkways, flower beds, all the sort of new reality symbolism, and that kind of mutualistic philosophical thinking of the 60s is actually embodied in this kind of reality. The other thing is that it seems to be working in a way, you know, that when I went there I was struck by the fact that it wasn't totally vandalised. So actually I really chose it because it seemed to symbolise the concepts that I was been interested in dealing with in my work for some time now. And the Harvey House is simply in the centre of the estate, so it's sort of, that was why I chose that particular tower block.
Well, in fact, the towers are in sight now, Steve. We've just turned into Green Dragon Lane.
Now, we're just coming around the corner now, and here you see the five towers with all the sort of walkways and the green grass around, and you can see it's all been totally landscaped, all part of the kind of new reality kind of conception, you know, the modern way of life in the future.
Well, we're drawing into the car park now. In fact, they're about 30 stories high, aren't they, roughly?
Well, they're 22 stories, Bill. 22, not quite 30.
Right, okay.
Here we go.
Okay. Well, now, I hope that was audible over the noise of the Morris Traveller, but I think we'll we'll get out now and go and go into the tower, Steve.
Okay.
Okay, we're just standing by the entry phone.
To get into the blocking.
Yeah, there's a security lock here. Hello, Sharon, it's Steve. Can you just let us in?
Okay, there we go. Let's go in. So where do we go now, to the lift?
Floor 15. Yeah, the piece now has got up to floor 15, so we're just over halfway.
Okay.
The lift here, classified means of communication. So here we go up into the inner structure of the tower.
Okay, and quite eerie in a sense.
Well, it's the reality of the place, and I think that's a very important part of the piece. I mean, it's this reality. I think it affects everybody that does come to see the piece.
Right.
And
I mean, you get a sense of being really cut off here somehow.
Well, you are. Not just the sense of being cut off, you are cut off.
Right, we're now on the 13th floor then.
Oh, yeah.
Right, we're here on the 13th floor, Steve, and this is one of the displays with the tower block and presumably an occupant with some arrows and so on. I mean, what, this is one of the displays you've got here.
Yeah, this is the latest display. You can see the structure of each display is the same. But of course, the orientation, you know, the kind of each display is different, and this is the sifting through process we were talking about earlier on, you know, that because quite a lot of people, they did actually discuss very similar things, but I had to decide which person was going to talk about this and which person was going to talk about that from looking through the transcripts, you know. So I mean, quite a few people, for instance, talked about the M4 in one way and another, but obviously I couldn't have all the displays talking about the M4, so I had to sort of like, a lot of people talked about the trees that you can't touch, you know, and I had to decide that one person would talk about that.
Shall we go down and talk
another? Yeah, okay. This is the 10th floor. Yeah. Right. So now we've got another display, if I can describe it. This time a mother and a child.
Well, because there are not too many families in these towers, but there are one or two here, and I try to get with a group of people a sort of really a fair representation of all the different kinds of people living in the tower. So, you know, it was very important for me to try and embody in it one or two families, young families. So this is the view, you see. She's like, this is, I read it out. Sometimes I imagine I'm going along a country road, because I'd like to have a go on a bike on the real road, but usually I might put on a pop record and it helps me keep pedalling. I just get on my bike, I keep looking at the clock and just see how far I've got to go. I suppose I just sit down and think about what I've got to do when I get off it, like start the dinner or some other boring household chore. What she's talking about, of course, is this sort of pedal bike, kind of exercise bike, you know, and because she's looking through the window at Kew Bridge here and so on, and she sort of projects herself, you know. I mean, it's very sort of powerful relationship between an inner world and an outer world, you know. And that means something, I think, to somebody, whether they live in a tower book or not. You know, it's kind of a powerful statement.
Well, we're back in the lift now, so we've looked at the display boards, the ones that are up, and I mean, one overwhelming sense that I get is a feeling of place here. You know, this tower block really has a very strong sense about it, doesn't it?
Well, that's really, Bill, why I chose this block, and this particular block, and why it's really important to see the work in context. You know, if the work was taken out of context, put in a gallery or museum, it couldn't operate in the same sort of way at all. I mean, the structure of the piece and the size of those displays and so on is all built to fit within the internal reality of this place.
Mm-hmm. Here we are, we're just going to Sharon.
So we're going to actually meet a resident now, are we?
Well, more than a resident, she helped me make the piece.
Right.
So she made the display that you just saw about the bike. And
right. Right.
She's got a family. We hope she's going to have some time for us.
I can hear the baby, isn't it?
Oh,
is the bell working?
No, the bell's not working.
Sure, English.
Hello, Sharon. This is Bill I told you about, who
Hello.
Makes this audio arts magazine.
Right. Hi, sorry to burst in on you like this.
These are just me to see people that helped me make some of the displays.
I'm
in
a very good
state
at the moment.
Mine's
a bad day.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
You come at the wrong moment.
So, if you could give us your view of this piece by Steve Willetts, you know, this project, what's your feeling about it?
Well, I think that it's really... well, hopefully it'll try and sort of bring people more friendly, you know, you get to know more people. I mean, people I've seen up on the boards that I haven't even seen before, you know, so hopefully, you know, people will be able to sort of recognise each other, and also when you get in the lift, it's something to have a conversation about, really, you know, which I think is quite good, you know.
What about the way in which the project involves the occupants of the flat, that is... choosing an object within the flat and also something outside of the work, the building.
Well, I think it's surprising how much you take things for granted. You don't really think about how much something is important to you until you're asked to sit down and think, you know, about it, and also to connect it with the outside, because I think you just go on using these things or whatever and you don't really take it into consideration, really, what it's all about, you know, what how important they are.
Now, did you choose an exercise bicycle and a space outside? Was that your choice?
Yeah. We there's not really much, I don't think, outside. But I mean, we chose the river over there. That's quite nice, quite a nice view. Because I sort of, in my comment, I said that I'd like to be driving along country roads. So really, that was appropriate, that pitch, because all the trees, Kew Gardens, and that.
So apart from that, you got quite involved with the making of the piece in an overall sense, did you? I mean, you worked and helped Steve.
Yes, whatever I said on the tape and that he brought back, and it was asked which piece I would like to. So it wasn't all done on Steve's part. I mean, we was asked what photographs could be. It was a joint decision, you know, which I think is good because it does involve you. Otherwise, you're just there, and then that's it. You know, you don't have any more say in it, and I think that's good.
Right. So, in fact, we're going down to the first floor now.
John, he made the display with me, and he was like, in fact, it's interesting to note that John was probably one of the first people I met here, and he put me in contact with quite a lot of people. You know, it was like a sort of chain. And in fact, has helped me throughout the project, haven't you?
Been sort of helping me put up the floor.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So we walked down to
the first floor. Yes.
So you in fact were the first person Steve contacted.
Yes. Well, he came up to our House and Tenants Association committee, and I happened to be on there, and of course I volunteered to help him best I could.
Right.
And being as I'm a pensioner and I'm around about here most of the time, I thought it was my duty also to try and help him. You see.
Right.
So, of course, this is where we are.
So your display, in fact, is we're walking to it on the first floor.
Oh, yes, onto the first floor, and then my display is down there, yes.
So, well, this was your response to Steve's request for you to select something from inside the block.
Absolutely,
and something through the window.
Yes, yes. Yes, well, we Steve sat down and spoke to us, and we managed to talk about various things that we do and what we see in the blocks, and you see, and that was a paragraph that was taken from what we were talking about, you see, saying that the ladies are entombed in it. My wife used to get about a lot and go to work. Since she's finished work, she's been quite satisfied to be able to sit and do a bit of knitting and all that sort of thing, and she cannot seem to, she cannot seem to find time or places to be able to go out, and of course, you know, this sort of muggings and all that sort of thing that you get around here. She seems to find that she's sort of entombed in it, you know.
You live in this block and you spend quite a lot of time here. What effect do you think this project has had within the block?
I think this has been a very, very good thing indeed. For instance, I go down on the even lift floor, and I only see mostly the people on the even lift. You get to talk to them, good morning, good afternoon, how are you? But you don't get to see the people on the odd lift floor. And this project has brought us in a co with a lot of people on the odd lift floors.
Well, we're on the ninth floor now with Andre Spiteri in his flat. And could we just, first of all, Andre, could I ask you, what was your response generally to the project that Steve Willett's here has involved you in?
Well, I thought it was a terrific idea, because the first thing I said to Steve is, I'm glad somebody's doing something like this about tower blocks, because whenever you see on television or in the media anything about slums or anything, the first thing the cameras or they seem to point to is tower blocks. And I think a lot of people have got the impression that if you live in a tower block, you live in, you know, just rubble. And gave people in this tower block an opportunity to let Steve and other people know what, you know, flats are like. They take a lot of pride in their flats, most of the people do, and I thought it was a terrific idea.
Mm. So, I mean, what about the particular things that actually you had to do, such as select something within your flat and something outside and link them?
Well, I take a lot of pride in my flat, and Steve was taken by all the tools I have, and I make a lot of things for it, and all the decorating tools that I have, and Steve took photographs of all that, and my view from my balcony, I mentioned that, and I mentioned to him that I see a lot of greenery and everything, but what was lacking was actual colour. So what I done, I made a very large window box, as you can see, and I put geraniums and blues and white flowers in there, and that completely finished the vista for me. You know, now I look out in the foreground, I see a little bit of colour, and in the background it's green, and it's very nice. Right, I looked out in the kitchen window, and it was a lovely sunny day, and I looked at the gardens opposite the tower block, and all the autumn colours and everything, so I got my camera and took a photograph of it. Beautiful, you know.
So what, I mean, what effect do you think that this work has had within the tower block here?
Well, I've asked one or two people that are in it, and everybody that I've asked think it's a terrific idea, even people that are not in it.
So has this project given people, do you think, an opportunity to say things and to express things that they wouldn't normally, do you think?
Exactly, that is the whole thing. It has given tenants the opportunity to say what they think and to let other people know, you know. And that's, you know, I think it's a terrific idea.
The rhino's skin is thick and tough, yet the skin is soft enough that baby rhinos always sense a love enormous and intense. Their mother may be short on arms, her skin is full of warmth and charms. A mother's touch on baby's skin endears the heart that beats within.
This is a story. I was sending us coffee in East End, and this guy walks in, the far side of 48. And he was a big man in his day, but now his block was down, his time run out, his shoulders were stooping, and his cock had crowed, and now it lay bitter and twisted in his mouth. And he ordered a cheese and pickle roll and a glass of milk. And he sits down at the table, and he took a drink of his milk and a bite of his roll, and then breezes in suspended mastication. And the transformation is sudden. There is anger in his body. Anger in his mind. Little trembles of fury run from head to toe. His face is purple, a cardiac arrest is on its way. Because there's no pickle in his
Her studio walls are windows. They frame the sea, the sky. Painting, alone, a figure in oil on linen. Crack. Sound startles. Bird hits window. Falls to sand. Wings limp. Time stops. Silence shatters. The bird stands erect. Its head tucks. Its wings contract as if someone shouted freeze. She watches through glass, rigid with the bird. Time dissolves.
Thank you. Passed it each morning.
I remember the lights
in the bus
of the oil derricks
on my way to work.
I saw from the bus
a church 5 miles
at dawn
out of
and
town.
What seemed then a
with dried up weeds around
it, and exciting
at the edge of an abandoned World War II air base.
As we would roll into the town on a band trip,
much smaller and the land around it much grayer than it seemed when years before.
Did you give up on life with others?
I went on Sunday mornings and Sunday and Wednesday nights.
Did you find someplace
in
like
50s,
a black hole?
In my tight Sunday pants.
Singular, free,
and choking.
From family and duplicity.
White shirt.
Even in your own mind.
And tie to sing.
In 51 a bus.
Find friends.
Carrying some kids.
And look at the young girls.
Who again was rest. Who sang.
Car.
Well, that was the Sound on Sound section of Audio Arts, and details of all of those items can be found on the cassette card. And now the 1986 Turner Prize. The winner will be announced on the 25th of November 1986, but the shortlist for the award has been announced as follows. Art and Language, for their recent exhibition at the Listen Gallery and for their continuing contribution to the critical debate about modern art and its context. Victor Bergin, for his exhibitions at the Institute of Contemporary Arts, London, and at Kettle's Yard, Cambridge. For the book of work and commentary, Between, and for his new book of collected essays, The End of Art Theory. Gilbert and George, for their exhibitions at the Guggenheim Museum, New York, and the Fruit Market Gallery, Edinburgh, and for the major retrospective exhibition now at Bordeaux, which is to be shown at the Hayward Gallery, London. Derek Jarman, in recognition of the outstanding visual quality of his films, in particular Sebastian, Jubilee, The Tempest, and Caravaggio. Stephen McKenna, for the exhibition of his recent paintings at the Institute of Contemporary Arts and the Edward Tota Gallery, London, and at the Kunsthaller, Dusseldorf. Bill Woodrow, for his exhibition of sculpture, Natural Produce, An Armed Response, at La Jolla, California, and for his many contributions to exhibitions in Britain, Europe, and the United States. And now something of the atmosphere of last year's presentation event at the Tate Gallery, with some predictions, comments, and views about the issues and implications of the award. The first person I spoke to will present this year's Turner Prize.
Asking Melvin Bragg, this is the Turner Prize announcement, and it's, I suppose, intended to be the visual arts equivalent to the Booker Prize. I mean, what's your feeling about it as an event and its importance in the scheme of things?
Well, I think it's achieved a prominent position very rapidly, and this year it's been covered 5 nights on Newsnight, which built up an expectation for it in the media, as they say, and I think Newsnight will be doing it again tonight. I think it's established itself very quickly, partly because people felt that, in all fairness, there should be a Booker-type prize for painting, just as there is for books. So, as it were, using that as a following wind, it's gone in well.
So, I mean, do you think it's actually working in that sense? I mean, do you think it's making contemporary art visible?
Not yet. I think it'll take a few years. But if it keeps being as increasingly successful as it is being, then in about 5 or 10 years' time, then I think it might have a much wider effect, yeah.
Right. So, first of all, who do you think should win it, rather than who do you think will win it?
I would like Ian Hamilton Finlay to win it. I think Howard Hodgkin will win it.
Why?
That's where I'd put my money if I were a betting man.
Who do you think is going to win the Turner Prize, Bill Packer?
Ian Hamilton Finlay, with Tony Cragg, a very good each-way bet.
Right, Richard Wentworth.
I'd like Milena to win it. Milena Kalinowska.
John Roberts.
Well, I think Terry Eckerton should win it, and Terry Eckerton probably will win it.
John Bird, what do you think?
I think Howard Hodgkin will win it, but Terry Atkinson ought to win it.
Right. Alan Hayden?
I think it's a strong argument between Milena and Terry Atkinson.
Paul Johnson?
I would like Milena to win it, but I don't think that necessarily is the same as should win it. I think an artist should win it. Given the shortlist, I would like Milena to win it. I think Cragg will win it for various reasons, though that is manifest insult to Hodgkin if he does. Anyway, Anthony Reynolds gave me 3-1 on Cragg, and I got a 5 on Cragg.
Now, it's a very great pleasure for me to welcome Sir Richard Attenborough, who is going to make the award of the prizes. Sir Richard is far too well known for any kind of introduction, but we remember him with particular fondness as a trustee of the Tate Gallery, and we know how very deeply he cares for the gallery and for our activities. Sir Richard Attenborough.
Alan, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sure, like you, in a way, disapprove of prizes, and I suppose coming from the movie business, that sounds totally ridiculous when we are without doubt the most sycophantic and incestuous group of prize givers that anybody has ever encountered. But there is something invidious, isn't there? The important thing is perhaps the nominations. But if a prize is to be given, it seems to me that the form that the Turner Prize takes is almost ideal. For beyond whatever the honour and the funding that comes the way of the winner, there has been created in the media an interest in modern art which, if we had attempted to do in any other form, would never have reached the scale and size of public that this particular prize has done, by this award has done, by having a prize. And so whatever the shortcomings are of prizes, it seems to me eminently worthwhile for the amount of attention that has been granted to modern art by the media. Well, enough. May I therefore read to you, please, the citation for tonight's Turner Prize. The Turner Prize for 1985 is awarded, I ought to have one of those envelopes, oughtn't I, and say the winner is awarded to Howard Hodgkin.
Howard, can I just say... Sorry, can I just say congratulations?
Hello.
What do you think? Winning this 1985 Turner Prize.
Well, I'm very, very pleased. As I said, very surprised. I'm sadly, I don't think I can think of anything very particular to say.
So, I mean, what do you think that the Turner Prize actually represents? I mean, you've won it. Here you are, you've won
it.
What
yes,
do you think it represents?
I think it represents a little slice of freedom for whoever gets it. Mm. I mean, I should spend a check on travelling, which I wouldn't otherwise do. I mean, something extra.
Talking to John Hodder, what do you feel?
He qualifies best to win the prize this year. I'm very glad he got it. That's all.
Mick,
I think it's fantastic. I'm very pleased for it.
Well, now, Marina Basie, what do you think about this year's Turner Prize?
I think the thing is arbitrary to a great degree. I think that the standard of everybody, although it's, you know, pears and apples, cheddar and brie, is exceptionally broad and good. And although I think it's very fashionable to criticise the whole thing as hype, as saying you can't have a competition for art and all that kind of thing, everything is competitive after all. Every artist jostles for a place in the shop window. It is, the whole thing is an amazing episode. So in fact, I'm for it. I think it's perhaps typical that paintings won the first year and paintings have won this year. I don't think the Turner Prize at the moment is ready to tackle things that are less tangible or less conventional. But I think the whole momentum of the debate has to be a good thing.
Well, John McEwan, what's your feeling about that?
Well, I'm delighted.
Did you anticipate that he was going to win this year? Did you think he was the front runner?
Well, I think he must have been the front runner. That is, once Bacon and Charles Saatchi were discounted, I thought there was an outside chance that it might go to the one non-artist.
Well, John Walters, what do you think?
Well, I wish you'd, Bill, asked me before, and I would have tipped, obviously, the winner. In fact, I did tip the winner. My piece for Janice Long's programme on Radio 1, surprisingly enough, was about the award that we've seen tonight.
You tipped Howard Hodgkin.
Well, you've got to. Well, that wasn't a clever thing. But on the other hand, I thought a lady from the Riverside, who I've met many times over the last couple of years, Melina, what's his name, you would have thought I'd like to see her get it, because these days art survives in a sort of public and visible sense because of people who actually want to push it to the front and are willing to wheel and deal and do the political thing and play one side against the other and so on and try and get it there. So it would have been a very good gesture. It was rather like one of those things where somebody might have said, well, should the police or Paul McCartney or John Peel get a rock award? And if, wait a minute, why should John Peel get a rock award? He can't sing God Save the Queen and keep it in tune. No, but he's done a lot for it. And frankly, I thought she had done a lot for it, and as a gesture that might have been done. But you couldn't deny that Hodgkin just simply could put the paint on. I mean, if you wanted to say who is the most distinguished artist who will be recognised throughout the world, I said beforehand it had to be Hodgkin, as many people did, and it obviously was.
Matthew Collins, editor from Artscribe magazine. I mean, what do you think about the announcement of Howard Hodgkin winning the Turner Prize?
Apparently it was received in a very lukewarm way. I wasn't here, so I don't know, but I agree with the reception. It's very boring to give the prize to that man. and I don't think they should bother to have the prize. They're going to be so boring about it.
Who do you think should have won it, or is it a criticism about the prize?
No, the prize itself is a good idea, but they've got to keep it lively. And in this case, they could have given it to Milena Kalinowska, or to Terry Atkinson, or Ian Hamilton-Binley. It was interesting last year when they gave it to Malcolm Morley, because that actually changed the awareness of art in this country and the international awareness about art that came from this country. This doesn't do anything. This is just a lot of people who... It's just a mistake.
Norman Rosenthal from the Royal Academy, what do you think about this year's Turner Prize?
I'm very glad that Howard won, because he's the best... I think he's the best of the artists. I suppose it was, you know, it's in a way the most conservative... the most conservative choice in some respects, but I think it was the right choice, surely. And, you know, I don't think it's very important at one level, but I mean, all the razzmatazz is quite good for art, I suppose. Draws attention and all that. That's all I want to say, really. I mean, I don't think it's important, but I suppose I'm here.
Now, we've just heard that Howard Hodgkin has won the 1985 Turner Prize. What's your feeling as director of Tate Gallery? And you're also chairman of the Turner Prize Committee, is that right?
Yes, I chair the jury. Well, I'm very pleased. As you know, he was shortlisted last time round, and I think it's very nice that he should win this time.
Do you think that the aim of the Turner Prize really is being fulfilled? That is, that it will or does raise the visibility of contemporary art within this country?
Yes, I think so. As you correctly say, the prime reason for having the prize at all is just really to get more publicity for the artists who are working in this country, who certainly do need a bigger public than they get. It really is very much the public interest that is stimulated by a competition of this kind that does help. I'm very pleased anyway, because I think all the artists, including those who didn't actually win, have certainly benefited from the Turner Prize this year.
Welcome you all here, and thanks very much for coming here this evening for the Audio Arts. The first Audio Arts Award ceremony of the year. There'll be another one this time next week. Okay, we move on very quickly now to Rita Donner and Richard Hamilton Award. Are they in the audience now? Could they come up for us, please? Now!
There was a good deal of lobbying and argument for the naming of this award, and in particular the idea of calling it the Oscar in memory of Oscar Schlemmer. But there was, rightly I thought, likely to be some confusion with the well-known annual Hollywood Gala, which so conspicuously honours Oscar Homolka. There was, I am glad to say, unanimous, after a few resignations, agreement with the proposition that our award should be named after that great performance artist, Audie Murphy.
We're going to have a musical entertainment provided by one of the great artists of our time.
The late great artist of our time.
Well, the late great artists, indeed, of our time. Paul Richards.
And the Peripherals.
The Peripherals.
go on to Bill Fever?
Absolutely. Is Bill Fever here?
My go, no. If the fixer would stop fixing for a moment, and
I wonder who'd won it.
I wonder who's won it.
Gosh,
I'm going all
Bill?
Hot and cold. It says nothing. Hold on. Dr. David Brown.
Thank you.
Do you want to sing a song,
Thank
Paul?
You. No, no, I promise I won't sing. Thank you very much. The end of another career. Oh. End of another award.
Here, take this one, Paul.
The Kamikaze Award for Street Credibility. Harry, where are you?
I should say that Kerry has changed his nomination.
Slightly. I would like to nominate the following people. Bruce McLean for having an account at the Caprice restaurant.
Bullshit. It's a lie.
Paul Richards for using David Hockney's hairdresser. Valdemar Janáček, again. For pretending to be Robert Hughes. Matthew Collins for finding funny money. Richard Deacon for admitting to being the grandson of Henry Moore. Paul Johnson for going back into the closet. And Bill Furlong for managing to get a fiver out of me.
I think then briefly on to Duncan Smith, if one can be brief about Duncan.
The next award, ladies and gentlemen, is the Richard Deacon Award. The Sinking Ship Award. Richard, are you in the house?
Yeah!
Yeah, well, wow, what a surprise. I'm just so emotional. But I'd just like to thank you for inviting me into your homes, automobiles, and your places of business. May the Lord be with you. Hallelujah!
Ladies and gentlemen, the Robin Klasnick Award for Future Shows. Robin, can we have you, please? And
slice,
the winner
please,
is
slice, please.
Anna Collins.
Anna Collins.
Absolutely not, Richard. What do you think we are?
And it's Anthony Doffey's won the award.
Yeah! Woo!
I'm getting the award for torture. I just tortured all of you.
Have an award.
And now we'll have the Flying Lizards, who are going to play one number, I believe. Thank you very much, Kathy Acker.
Well, he walked up to me and he asked me if I wanted to dance. He looked kind of nice, so I said I might take a chance. When we danced, he held me tight.
Mary Kelly.
Is she here?
And here she is. Yeah.
My nominations for Flying in the Face of Reason are...
Yes, David.
Michael Clarke for Demonstration of Complete Excess. And Barry Flanagan for Sculpture Well Beyond the Call of Duty. And to Rose English, Sally Potter, and Jackie Lansley for their joint works. In particular, one piece which I have never seen.
It's Yvonne Blaswick, of course.
Yeah!
Is she here?
Benevolent autocracy and recognition of other talent regardless of their competition and avarice and
irresistible aftershave. And to present this award, I would like to invite on stage Jane Pearce.
Yes! He's here, Terry Atkinson, yes! Come on down now, come on down. Come on down, Terry.
It's a strange night. The last time I saw Sylvia, we were browsing together in the Sinn Féin bookshop at the British Art Show.
Patrick Hearn's award tonight is for the Diploma for Very Fine Art.
Diploma in Very Fine
Art. Oh, in, yeah, yeah.
There are three possibilities here. Oh, yes, Prunella Clough, Margaret Mellis, Cal McNichol.
And?
And what?
And the winner is?
Oh.
We're spreading the news. They were flying today. Come on and be a part of it. New York, New York.
Good night, everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you and good night.